And hello, everyone. I've got a very special guest today. Matt Cornell writes for a weblog, ideamatt.blogspot.com, matthewcornell.org. And one of the things that I found in reading through your blog, Matt, was this idea of experimentation with life. I'm wondering if you would share with us what you mean by this. How do you actually go about treating life experimentally?
Well, that's a great question, Jay, and thanks for having me. It's really good to be here. How do you treat life as an experiment? Well, this last few years, I've made some major changes in my life, switching careers, becoming self-employed, and I found that I started treating things like, I don't know how this is going to work out. Let's just see. And once I started looking at life that way, a bunch of stuff fell into place. So how do you look at it? You know, you're trying something new. You just say to yourself, this is an experiment. I don't know how it's going to go.
Seems to me that you probably need a little bit of trust in not only yourself, but in the process of engagement.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's the hard part, because just saying, you know, I don't know, let's try it, is very risky. What I found is helpful is actually borrowing some of the ideas from science. Ideas like having a little theory. What's going to happen? How could it work? And also observing. You know, once you get into something, things never go the way you expect, right? So observing, what did I actually see happen compared to what I expected? And that at the end of it, be agile. You know, look at what happened and say, okay, I learned something. And that's the thing. You are guaranteed to learn something. That's the beauty of science, no matter what you think your outcome should be for something.
It sounds like you have a little bit of a science background or an engineering background. Do you think that that plays a part in this?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, I'm a, you know, ex-NASA geek, so I like this stuff. And there's a very analytical side of it, but I think the appeal might be broader because, you know, this idea, I'm sure you've looked at things as an experiment, right? This is not a new perspective, but it jumped out at me. What do you think?
Well, you know, when I was a high school teacher, and for anyone who's read anything that I've written or heard one of my seminars, I talk about that career as very formative in my life. And for some reason, in my third year of teaching, I started running these Saturday courses. They were learning courses, how to take tests, how to take notes, how to organize your backpack, how to set up a study space at home. And in that, I found, I did a few of these, and then one Saturday, parents started showing up, the parents of my kids. And so for me, it was a way to experiment with, call it adult education, call it corporate education. You know, if you look at what I'm doing now, Matt, I'm basically running corporate seminars on time management, productivity, organization in the workplace. And I liken all of that back to an experiment I ran. Now, there was a very low entry fee, right? I had a classroom that I had access to every Saturday. I had a market that trusted me, for better or worse. The parents of the students trusted me. So that was just my own experience of experimentation. I just don't know, Matt, if I would have put it as a form. I don't know if I would have run through the scientific method, if you will, right?
Yeah, exactly. Two things came up while you're talking about that. First of all, you know, kids are natural experimenters, right? They're built to get out there and try things, and they're courageous. And, you know, I was thinking of the science fairs where you got a kid who mixes, you know, Coke and Mentos, and the thing, you got a volcano, or somebody tries to come up with a nuclear reactor or something nutty as heck. But, you know, it's that courage and that interest to try things that I've been able to tap into looking at this stuff.
You know, that leads me to a question that I'd love for your insight on. What about the ratio between, I mean, if we're talking about experiments, you know, we've all heard the saying about the light bulb and how many experiments it took. What do you have to say about the ratio between failures and successes?
That's an excellent point. One of the things that you just reminded me of is, I think it was Isaac Asimov was talking about that Eureka moment. And he said, you know, what's more important than Eureka is, that's odd. Because it's those unexpected things. Eureka is like, okay, I'm working to get this particular solution, and boom, I got it. And a lot of times it's a different way, where it's like you get hit by something or you notice some surprise or some oddity, and you think, what's that about? I think I'll explore it. So that's one thing about the light bulb. And then what was the second question? I'm sorry.
The ratio between the ratio. Failures and successes. You know, I think a lot of people will wait to try something until they're fairly confident it will work in their favor.
Right, exactly. So, again, figuring out what is the definition of success. And you and I have talked about that in the work we do, right? Be clear about that when you're going into something. In this case, being flexible means that the ratio, in some sense, kind of doesn't matter. As long as you know that you're trying to learn something and you'll come out of this knowing, what if I tried that? Okay, I tried it. I know it. So the success to failure ratio, that's a good question, though. I imagine some people are probably more comfortable with a higher ratio than others. I don't know. What's your ideal ratio, Jason?
The ideal ratio, I'm not completely certain, but it sounds to me like there's almost a successful outcome to the successful outcome, which is under the broad umbrella of engagement and productivity. I'm going to get to the other side, whether I hit the numbers, I hit the goals. You know, I think in the current economic situation we're in, everyone's going to be trying to measure everything.
That's right. And the thing is, it's all uncertain, right? Things are changing really fast these days.
So what's a way to practice this? What do you have so that we can kind of get used to, or do you have any activities that people could try just to experiment with experimenting?
Oh, that's a good – well, there's a couple things people can try that you and I have talked about, and that's like, you know, little experiments where you just observe for weight loss. What did I eat today? And keep a log of that. That's a classic one. Or how many of my, you know, to-dos or actions did I actually accomplish? And just measuring. Something I thought you and I could do, though, is I have a list of words. And I thought if you're up for it, maybe we could just sort of riff off a word. So I'll say a word, and you tell me either something that you've had in the past that connects, or maybe a thought that pops up. You want to try it?
That sounds like a good experiment to me.
Okay. Here's one. Ambiguity.
You know, not knowing what I'm going to come up against or come up with or come up to in a certain day, for me, has been a way to engage. And as I'm saying this, I'm smiling. It's the it's the ambiguity of life, of relationships, of sport. You know, specifically, I'm thinking in my mind about racing triathlon. And as clear as I can be about what the course looks like, about what my competition looks like, about what the day and the weather looks like, there's a certain sense of unclarity, ambiguity. What's the current of the ocean right now? What's the wind direction when I get on the bike? Where's the water stops along the run?
Nice.
And just, you know, being comfortable not knowing everything, I think, is a good place for me to learn things.
That's a huge one, being uncomfortable with uncertainty and not knowing. I don't know is probably one of the strongest phrases that you can use in your life, in my opinion. And it's also one that involves, it's very tough in some environments to say that. We got time for one more word?
Let's try it.
Okay. Curiosity.
Insatiable curiosity.
Nice.
And I remember... I went through my Y stage a bit late in my life. I was about 7, and my stepdad and my mom had recently been married. They opened up a restaurant, and I was walking around this restaurant that they were rebuilding, and why? And I remember my mom saying, "Jason, you are insatiably curious."
Mm.
And that for me was an okay. It's an okay way to run through life for me.
It's beautiful.
Want to know.
We're driven to know, right? I mean, we're a species that's so successful because we ask questions. Why is that? And it's part of what's got us there. You know, there's that 5-why exercise you can do, too, that I think comes from the medical world based on that.
Matt, I'm sure there's so much more we could talk about. If anybody wanted to find out about your upcoming book or get in touch with you, what's the easiest way for us to do that?
I think if they just go to MatthewCornell.org, I've got contact information there. My blog is... it's MatthewCornell.org/blog.
Perfect.
And they can also contact me, send me an email, and just to get the conversation going.
Really appreciate your time today, Matt.
Well, thanks for having me.
It's
been
fun, Jason.
I'm
looking forward to the next conversation.
Sounds great. Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.